Welcome to the Round 13 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week we're joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Not too bad, thanks, mate. Fortunately, didn't score quite as well as I'd hoped, and god damn it, you pipped me. But before we get into that and all the pains of the weekend, we've got a special guest joining us this week. Faz is back on for the show.
G'day, guys. Great to be back. Unfortunately,
welcome back, fam.
Horrible week of scoring to rejoin the team.
Before we start the show, a dedication to Johnny the Boy, who was a part of our community over the last few years. Always would post score updates and that. Obviously, we're only restricted to our interactions with him on the forum, but a shout out to Johnny the Boy, who passed this week with cancer. All the best to his family if they happen to listen to the show. We'll miss him around the place.
Respect.
After that slightly somber note, we'll get into the weekly update. I'll kick us off with my equally somber score this week of 16.79. God, it was terrible. I had 21 playing players and the team mustered up that crap.
God. Wow.
So angry. I got 51 from Oxley, 57 from Hodge, 64 from Brody Smith. And I hate him so, so much. Kavanagh. Sub 23, Wallace 66. Like, people across the board had terrible weekends, but oh, what a kick in the guts. Score after score in the 50s. In the end, I had 50s replace 30s for my three non-playing players, so just gross weekend. Somehow, still went up 500 spots, so everybody just did terribly. I went up to 6,400, so sort of feel like I just slipped over and ended up moving forward, which is weird. But Mark, you can gloat. You top scored out of the three of us this week, so.
Yeah, 1768 from me, mate. Moved up to 1378, so almost in the top 1,000, which coming into the buys, I was really hoping to be pushing that top 1,000 by the end of them, because I did go pretty hard on trades, probably more than I was hoping with players being out in round 11. But yeah, got pretty close to that top 1,000 ranking, and hopefully you can keep pushing on it in the next couple of weeks. Yeah, lots of crap scores out there from super popular players. You mentioned Brody Smith. I did actually bring him in last week. It was just too good a deal to pass up as a straight swap for Camden. Because I looking into his stats, he was getting the possessions and he just needed to be hitting some targets. And the interesting thing is watching him in that game was he's supposed to be renowned for his kicking. Like, that's the reason he's in the team. He's a really good kick and they want to get it in his hands for that purpose. But he would hold onto the ball and then just kick it directly into space so the opposition could run onto it. Just crazy, crazy bad disposal efficiency. So hopefully he picks that one up in the next couple of weeks.
He hasn't scored above 75 in 7 weeks. Trust me, I've bloody noticed. I hope he turns it around, Mark, but I wouldn't be getting your hopes up anytime soon. He's awful, awful. Faz, how'd you go on the weekend, mate?
Unfortunately, the tale of woe continues. I scored 1481 on the weekend, which I think could be an all-time low.
Jesus.
Yes. That's when we dropped 3,000 spots in the rankings. Unfortunately, I couldn't slip over and move forward the way you did, Marcus. That also halted a four-week run of my ranking increasing. This week saw me slip right to about 8,000th. I already went into the weekend knowing that I'd be holding a donut with a few too many round 13 midfielders in the team. Then I thought I'd make a trade and get Sean Edwards to cover one of those spots in the back line. So he pulled
out a
nice 9 points for me. That was pretty brilliant. Pretty poor performance all round.
Being a generally painful weekend, and Steve Lapone commented on Facebook, "Where's the delete my team button?" And that got 10 likes. So clearly a lot of frustrated people in the community. But for some reason, again, this slipping and falling forward thing seems to be happening. Either that or there's a few of you guys out there literally carrying the torch for the rest of us. Either way, our league's killed it again, which is awesome. So the biggest mover for the week, Supercoach Coach 4, they were 20th last week. They've come in 10 spots to be in the top 10 in 1 week. So well done to you guys.
we're up to 8 of the top 11 now coming out of the buys, which we have seen groups dominate sort of the top maybe 4 or 5 before, but I don't recall ever seeing any group have 8 of the top 10 leagues at any stage. So, yeah, it's a fair effort from our team, and everyone must have listened to our advice and planned for the buys. It'd be interesting to see if we could hold off as the season goes on, but awesome effort this year by everyone in the community.
So I'm just going to read out all the leagues in the top 40. First, second, third, sixth, seventh, eighth, 10th, 11th, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 27th, and 33rd. So that's 11 leagues all up in the top 33, and that makes close to 200 coaches that are represented in the top 40 in our community. So well done, community. Huge, huge effort. And don't forget, supercoachcoach.com.au/forums. You can jump on and talk with the boys at any time. More people getting on board as the leagues are doing so well. Make sure you jump on and get involved. Just a quick update for the Supercoach Coach group. The top scorer for the week scored 19-19. That's Heinz All-Star. So well done to you, mate. That's a pretty massive score this week. 500 points more than Faz, which is massive.
Oh, jeez.
Big effort by Cometti's Legion as well, who scored 19-09. He's coach on the Supercoach Coach community website. Well done to you, mate. You moved into 46th with that score. Yeah, so that's awesome result. Well done to you. Nate's Nags at 34th, Travesty at 2nd, and Team Durek at 86th. So well done to all of you for hanging on in the top 100.
Travesty's at 2nd, is he? He's been hanging around that top 5 for a fair while now. He'd have to be a fair chance.
Yeah, when he's only 110 points behind the guy who traded both Fife and Pendlebury out. So he's almost in the box seat, I reckon. No, he's doing well, Travis. Well done to you, mate. Remember, you can ask us questions on Tuesday on facebook.com/supercoachcoach and on Twitter @supercoachcoach. That's what we use to form the show every week. So thank you for your responses. And we're going to start off this week with the injury and suspensions. Adam Enright's question, or Eggy Enright on Twitter, is asking about the viability of keeping Rory Sloane. He's out for 4 to 6 is the prognosis with a fractured cheekbone, but this is the second time he's done it this year. So there's suggestion that he will be out closer toward the 6 if they want to be conservative. What do you guys reckon about keeping Sloane?
I guess it depends who comes on field, really. Like, I think it's a pretty risky strategy. In my case, I have a premium coming on field, at least in the short term, so I could potentially just wait and see in that spot. But I would suggest that most people, a 4 to 6 week injury is a definite trade out. And given the fact that he's re-injured the same thing, it would be just like Rockley if they were given the full recovery period, you'd think. So minimum 4 weeks he'd be out.
The other thing that you might factor in is how much cash you have in the bank, because that's obviously going to dictate what you can do with Sloane. He's still quite low priced. That's why we were all bringing him in, was because he was such a bargain. Unfortunately, he's gone down with only one real good score. So at 480, there's not a whole lot of good options, and it might come down to whether you like the guys around his price enough. If you don't have the cash, maybe you'd wait, try and do a downgrade to get somebody else.
I think overall, I agree with you both. I think probably the most sensible course of action is to trade Sloane out. I think that in some team situations, it might be worthwhile holding. I see there's some teams with 9 premium midfielders already. If you can bring on a player that can average 95, and like Vaz said, maybe you don't have a lot of money, you can only trade Sloane to a player that costs around 480k, you might only make 10 points per week for the 4 weeks or even 6 weeks that he's out. That's only really 40 to 60 points. So if you're really low on trades, you've got good premium cover, and you don't have much money to deal with Sloane, I can start to see why you'd think about keeping him, because the factors do sort of add up. Is there any situation where you'd consider holding him, Mark?
The situation you describe is exactly my situation, where I'd have to be benching 100 averaging premium anyway. So, yeah, look, I think I'll just wait and see. Rockliff is listed as 1 week on the injury list. If he's fully fit, he'd be potentially the best candidate to be bringing in that's cheap. So I might just wait a week and get some more information, potentially, obviously depending on team selection this week.
I think I'm at a pretty similar point at this point in the week as well. I know a lot of people probably looking at trading him out with a 4 to 6 week injury, but I do think there'd be some teams out there who might end up just holding him.
But I think in most situations, like probably more than 80 or 90% even, trading him out would probably be the best course of action.
All right, on to Lincoln Begg's question, or Old Campaigner SC. Best value Sloane replacement. Mark, you were saying you're low on cash. Have you looked at this?
Yeah, that's one reason why I'd potentially wait for Rockliff next week, because he's basically a straight swap. top. I have got enough cash to avoid the JPK, Joe Watson type players, even though I already have JPK. But guess that JPK is the obvious one. He hasn't been awesome for our teams recently, but against Richmond, he did play pretty well. An awesome first half and a great last quarter, and scored 115, I think. So JPK is probably the under 500 obvious one at the moment.
One guy that I've been having a bit of a look at is David Mundy from Fremantle. He's 539,000, so not super value. You'd still need a bit of cash in the bank to go up to him from Sloan, but he has been having some tremendous scoring this season. I think he's averaging about 115 or something. So if he could get anywhere near that, that's a pretty good value pick.
I think if you can get up to the 540 range, you probably have a few more options. You've got Mundy, Treloar is at 535, Wines at 531, Neil at 530. Those all seem like pretty decent options if you can squeeze out that extra little bit of cash.
I'd probably add Heppel to that group as well.
Yep, that was his poorest game on the weekend with a 72. And I'd say that's pretty much as bad as he can play. A 72 as a baseman is pretty good. I think if you only have 20K to play with, I can see the value in holding off or making a decision until at least Rockcliffe comes back. Is there any chance he's back this week?
Maybe some chance, but he's still definitely listed as a week on the injury list. And yeah, you would think that they'd probably give him the full recovery period.
If I didn't have the money to go to, you know, 530K range, I'd be very, very tempted to actually just hold off for a week.
That's interesting. The 530K range doesn't actually really interest me that much. There's sort of a lot of 110 maybe averages there. You discussed all the players before that are probably pretty decent picks, but Luke Parker's the one that stands out, the 569,000, and Hanbury up around that price, and Beams and Pritis up a bit higher as well. If you can't reach those four sort of guys, then the others don't seem like obvious picks, and they seem just a little bit below the super premiums that are about 570 and above.
Any of the cheaper options like Sheil or Sidebottom, Selwood even, do any of them take your fancy?
Not particularly. Sidebottom seems to have an amazing potential for scoring, which he showed us last year, but good Collingwood friend of ours, Abs of Steel, said he should probably stay away, so I will. But he does have a huge potential to go up, but I guess there's reasons why the others are down in price at the moment. I'm sort of probably a bit reluctant to go with the GWS mids now that Mumford is out. I'm sure that they'll score well, but I think they'll all probably take a couple of points hit with Mumford being out, because there won't be so many clearances for them, and I think GWS will probably struggle to win as many games without Mumford as well.
Definitely a great point, Mark. Fremantle players dropped off in the past when Aaron Sanderlands was out for extended periods, even though they're all clearance machines down there. You do notice when a significant ruck is absent. Kennedy seems like the best option of all the cheap guys, which is weird to say because really only just last week, both you and I recommended not trading him in. But I think situationally, if you're stuck with trading out Sloan and you don't have much cash, he does really look like the standout target. The next question, Hellbent's question, best replacement for Sloan if money was no issue. Beams at 610 does seem quite a standout option. Just wonder, like 130K does buy you a lot of flexibility. So I think in Faz's situation, I would recommend trading to Beams because he still has 50K left to play with for his next trade. But if you just are able to hit Beams, I would almost consider just taking Kennedy's value instead.
It a little bit depends on whether your team's fully upgraded as well. So if you've got any spots in your team that you're still thinking you might want to upgrade like a decent rookie, like maybe an Oxley or a Cripps to someone, then that cash again becomes more valuable to you perhaps later on.
We'll move on to the last question in the midfield then. So we've talked about Beams probably being the most attractive option, and you mentioned Hanbury and Parker, Mark. I think those are all good nominations. But Blitzarves, the sneaky Blitz, is killing it at the moment. He's averaging 110, which is pretty crazy. People are asking whether or not he's a legitimate option in the midfield as a Sloan replacement, potentially. He's obviously pretty expensive at 567K. Is there any merit to that at all?
You would probably know better than us, mate. And I guess the fact that Stanley, I see out for the rest of the year now, and I'm not sure of Simpson's status. I'd think that he'd be better off playing not the sole number one ruck, if possible.
I continue to underestimate him, and he continues to surpass my expectations. Take out Gawn, who's only played three games. Goldstein's the second highest averaging player in the AFL, behind Fife. And so from that perspective, there is potentially some upside in a player like Blitzarves, but I don't know, it seems super risky. I would almost definitely take Hanbury or Parker type instead, I think. Continue to underestimate the bloke, so I Just got to keep adding these stupid disclaimers in. On to the next piece of bad news, and that's Buddy being suspended. So obviously we didn't actually get any questions about that, but I'm just going to have a mini rant. God damn it.
I didn't realize that that was bad news.
Yeah. Luckily for me, Mitchell scored even worse than Buddy and got subbed out. Phew.
Yeah, my Mitchell rant last week may have been going early.
Oh, man. Timing could not be more perfect. Set me up perfectly this week, so I appreciate it. Anyway, Buddy's out for a week, so just remember to chuck him on your benches. I don't think anybody should be trading one-week injuries at this point in the season. And Buddy was killing it before he obviously had a brain fade, and it affected him a lot. He was on, like, 55 points at halftime.
Not the first time we've seen Buddy completely lose focus when he's been reported.
Yeah, certainly not the first. Anyway, the next piece of news. Stefan Martin, suspended for 2 weeks. A lot of people brought Ruckman in a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of people brought in Stefan Martin. So it's been a bloody painful year for Supercoach. Most of us have traded out any sort of ruck cover, which means that people are facing potential donuts this week. Would you guys recommend trading Martin out, or perhaps trading in a McKernan or Gorn type to cover him for the set 2 weeks?
Definitely going the second option, guys.
So you would be trading in cover rather than trading out Martin?
Since it's a 2 week thing and you don't know whether you're going to need someone to cover them later in the year as well, just seems to make sense. If you can make it work, like Tarrant to McKernan or something like that, seems like it could work pretty well.
I'd be inclined to agree with you there, because I think Martin's really up there as one of the out and out top scorers in the ruck line. It's Goldstein clearly one. We obviously all have no idea what's happening with Blixovs at number two. And then I think Martin's right up there with those guys. I think he's, you know, a step above everybody else. So I think you'd be doing a downgrade if you're side swapping and it's not to Goldstein. And I'd quite like McKernan as an option. I was very impressed with his game on the weekend. I think a lot of Essendon supporters were. His backup work after the contest, he wasn't getting a whole lot of hitouts himself, but getting in amongst the contests and laying tackles and all those kind of things, which are great for point scoring. And I'd probably have him quite a bit above Gorn. Even though Gorn could keep scoring well, there's still that element of doubt and that $150,000 or $200,000 saving that you get with McKernan. I'd prefer to have him sitting on my bench floating as cover than Gorn.
Strongly recommend not trading Martin out. Like, it's pretty damn lucky to have a 250k and 410k ruck forward available on the week that he gets injured. Like, it'd be so much more painful if you were forced in a situation where you had to, like Faz says, downgrade in your rucks just to deal with donuts. So I think out of the two, I also like McKernan more. I think something to note is that for the mid-season reviews on the Melbourne Demons website, Paul Ruse actually wrote them, which I thought was pretty interesting, because you normally don't get coaches putting their views on players mid-season, like, out in the public. But he put Gorn as being inconsistent at the start of the year and breaking into the team and really consolidating. But still, the tone was more that we hope he stays in the team and does really well from now on. Jake Spencer's review, on the other hand, was most improved player in our team for the year. And that's the guy he's competing with. So I don't think Gorn's a bad pick. Like I said, if you can hide him in your forward line and subvert the risk that way, then he's a great pick. But considering we have a McKernan on the bubble this week, and Gorn's job security really isn't like 100% yet,
McKernan's, on the other hand, seems to be about as solid as they come for a guy that price, because Bell Chambers is done for the year. Carlisle just got announced as being out for 4 to 6 with an ankle, so there's no chance in hell, I think, of McKernan dropping out of the team.
And he came in round 7 and only left because Winderlich came back, and he was still not available when they dropped Bell Chambers and they didn't bring Giles in. So I think that is also a great sign, and as soon as he's available to be elevated again, they brought him back on. And Carlisle being out for a while as well, McKernan's a forward as well, so if they really wanted to bring Giles in, they could still play McKernan forward while Carlisle is out. So yeah, I really like the McKernan pick. And Mark, you were pretty hot on him last week. I was considering going early on him, and kind of wish I did instead of getting the Bont last week, to be honest.
Well, yeah, he would have got you more points for less coin. Yeah, for all the reasons that you've suggested, I think he's a pretty good pick.
So off the injuries and suspensions, a little bit of rookie talk now. For those of you guys who are still looking to downgrade at this point in the season, Edwards is on the bubble, but he played and scored 9 points, not as the sub, and then got subbed out. So in terms of keeping his spot, that looks a little bit shaky.
Yeah, I think that he might be still a chance to keep his spot. The problem is that the Bombers have got a couple of players coming back. Zaharakis should be named this week, and Hocking's probably a decent chance as well. I think playing against the Hawks, he was probably always going to struggle, and we're playing St Kilda this week, so it would be nice to see him play a lower team. There's some chance that he'll keep his spot.
Neil Bullen is another one who's going to be on the bubble if he plays his third game in a row this week. He was on the bye.
You'd expect him to be selected after kicking three goals last week. Lambert and Steele, because of their dual position status, would probably be my bets in the midfield. And if you don't have Steele, I'd probably be looking at him, but I think Lambert will also get better.
That's all the rookies, isn't it?
If you needed one down back, Nick Holman from Carlton played his first game on the weekend, only got 30 points as he started as the sub, but looked lively when he came on and pretty composed with the ball in his hand, and I think he'll continue getting games. Obviously, Edwards is the one on the bubble, but I almost have Holman above him after just the one performance. I'm pretty shaky on Edwards' job security.
We'll move on to the other questions now from Jason De La Harp. He's asking whether he should be upgrading Cripps this week to achieve a full premium team. So, I mean, he's obviously not a true premium, but he doesn't hurt too much either sitting at M8. If he can average 100 and the premium midfield option that you can bring in can only average 110, you'd only really be making 100 points for the rest of the season. So is it worth maybe holding on to these marginal players? Your thoughts, Mark?
It's an interesting question and one that I'm battling with at the moment, because I have potentially Wallace and Cripps sort of rotating through the M7, M8 and M9 spots. So I only really need one of them on the ground. Very impressed by Cripps on the weekend that he was tagged in the first quarter. It sort of shook him a little bit and he only had, I think, 7 points at quarter time, but then really worked his way into the game and found a way to get the possessions and make an impact, and realistically would have scored over 100 easily if he had actually kicked straight in front of goal. So I thought that was a really good sign from him. Wallace also worried me as well. I think the fact that he really got off the leash the week before in that second half means that he did seem to cop a bit more attention against St Kilda. When he was in the forward line as well, they sort of seemed to double team him when he was going up for marks a few times. So both of Wallace and Cripps actually worry me a little bit. Sort of waiting and seeing though on them both at the moment. You got any better advice than that?
I think that's good advice with Cripps, especially just because we know that rookies tend to tire. Whereas Wallace, the reason we brought him in is because it's the right time for him to break out. Same amount of games played when Sloan broke out to 110 averaging player. The bad part is he plays a position where you need to score goals in order to score points. But the good part is Western Bulldogs have one of the easiest runs on the way home. I think North are probably the only one comparable to them, especially over the next 6 week period. We've mentioned it heaps before, so I won't go through it again. But their run is very, very attractive. And Western Bulldogs are an inconsistent team, but I expect that, you know, over the course of a 6-8 week period where they get a really good run, that he should be able to average at least 105. That's my guess, so I would not trade Wallace out, but I would certainly consider trading Cripps out. Although I can understand why people are worried about Wallace. Faz, you don't actually have Wallace, so...
Or Cripps.
Or Cripps. Okay.
I'd never had Wallace and traded Cripps out early like an idiot.
So as an impartial observer then, what's your judgment on these two players?
I have more faith in Cripps, to be honest. Really stood up on the weekend through a very tough tag from Reigns. If he can do that, still score 80 points with a tough tag, which he's not going to be getting every week when there's guys like Gibbs and Murphy ahead of him in the midfield.
Yeah,
I've got faith that he can at least probably pull 100 average out for the rest of the season. And as we discussed before when we're talking about the Sloan trade options, it's a similar boat in the sense that there's not really guys at the same price that
we really
like that much.
And his break-even's only 69, which I think he didn't hit in round one, you know, once more when he returned from injury in round eight. Basically, he's been scoring 80 pluses at least, and last week that was being tagged. So probably shouldn't undersell his scoring history, even though he is a rookie.
You got 170. Like, how many other players have even done that?
Yeah, that's true. The last two questions I want to get to are actually midfielders, just because we neglected them a little bit when we did a lot of premium talk in the midfield, but Matthew Pridis, perennially forgotten, but always performing. 114 average actually puts him, like, honestly, right up the top. Like, he's in the top six averaging midfielders right now. I'm pretty sure you and I both dismissed him earlier on in the season, saying, who needs Mr. Consistent when he costs that much? But if he's a top six mid, in hindsight, probably would have been good to get on.
Yeah, he's just not a sexy pick, because you hardly really notice him even getting the ball, because he's just always at the bottom of the pack and just always seems to get it done. I mean, if you've got the money, he seems like a pretty solid pick with West Coast could draw, and they've got other midfielders to draw attention away, then so Pritis should be able to continue his good performance.
Still behind Beams, though?
Yeah, I think that Pritis, like, he's on 115 average now, and that includes his 197 that he scored. So I just think Beams is more likely to be able to get to a 120-plus average than Pritis, personally.
Something to note is they are in the top four right now, which they've exceeded expectations. They've performed very, very well. But on the run home, I think they're in the top five worst draws on the run home. So things do get a lot tougher for them. So that is a consideration. Because he's less of a game winner, he does need his team to do well in order to get to 110. Dangerfield's the other one that I want to bring up, and we didn't talk about him because all three of us have him, and on this show we've pretty much always recommended bringing Dangerfield in pretty much for the entire season and anytime he was available, because he was a lock, I think, right from the start, from our first preseason show, Mark, and he's pretty much stayed that way. But he's at 636,000 now, which is huge. That's a very expensive price tag, and that's because he had a 188 in his price movement for quite a few weeks from around 9 score. Mark, would you still consider Dangerfield at that price tag if you were a coach without him?
No, I don't think I would. I've paid full price for Dangerfield before and it's burned me. I don't think so. I've got Dangerfield and I'm very, very happy to have him. He's been playing awesome footy. I don't like playing full price for Dangerfield though. I mean, he's got the potential to average really, really high. His upside is huge, whether he can reach it or not. He hasn't been able to really in the past. So I'd probably be pretty wary of that.
Sorry?
It's just really good to see Fife and Dangerfield dominating Supercoach because they're such awesome players to have in your team and to support and watch on the weekends.
I'm a little bit more gung-ho about Dangerfield, and a little bit of that is a little bit of optimism as a Geelong supporter, because I saw how well Gary Ablett played when he knew he was leaving Geelong, and he played pretty darn well. He was maybe even BOG when we got smashed in the last finals performance, and it looks like Dangerfield is putting on a stellar performance in maybe his last year this year. And when Dangerfield is on song, I sort of feel like he could be a must-have player. I think if you were going to pay 610 for Beams, I would probably just pay the 25k extra for Dangerfield. But I really like Dangerfield. I'd say that, you know, there's a decent chance that he stays in the top two averaging mids, in which case you'd like to have him as opposed to not. Anyway, that wraps up this week's show. So a lot of midfield talk in the end, and probably fitting considering Sloan.
Absolutely.
Faz, thanks for joining us again this week, mate. Good to catch up after the buys, although...
Unfortunately, the scoring didn't really make me seem like much of an expert this week. Not that I am, but yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, I think I'll be taking the advice and jumping on Beamsy this week.
Oh, God, don't... You jumped on Edwards last week. And don't come back on in a couple of weeks and blame me for this one as well, mate.
You know I will, Mark.
Well, I really like that, Faz. To be honest, I'm jealous. If I had that type of cash, I would do that trade.
Surely, Mark, you're jumping on Luke Parker after his last 7 or 8 weeks.
Mate, we talked about Sydney midfielders last week, and then, like, in a week...
But it's Luke Parker.
I really don't know what to do, Mark. I'm actually considering holding still. I'm down to 6 trades. There's still weaknesses. I've got Cripps and Wallace still both on field. So if they start to taper off, there's big points in upgrading them, in which case I might hold Sloan because I have premium cover.
I know in your spot I'd be very, very tempted to take Parker. Personally, I'm probably just going to wait a week and just get some more information. So the team sheets go my way, mate. Yeah, pretty happy to bring my spare player in last week in Deledio.
Well done anyway, mate, because I think even though you didn't quite make the top 1,000, you did move up, you know, from the 4K mark to within a few hundred spots of the top 1K. So well done to you. I underperformed in comparison. So I'm glad the rest of the community...
I've been all year, mate.
Unfortunately, I'm glad you keep bringing that up. It makes it so much easier to come back each week.
Speaking of coming back each week, mate, 6 years we've been slugging it out. Unfortunately, one of the other groups out there, Jock, has pulled the pin this week because they're sort of not seeing the rewards for all their efforts. They've put in a lot of shows, they've put in a big effort to build the community, and it'd be a bit sad to see them go, I think.
Definitely a massive shout out to that community. I know they're devastated overall. Listen to their final show this week, and as always, it's always in good humour, and do enjoy their debriefs on a Sunday night. So, massive shout out to all the work they've done. Like you mentioned, Mark, we certainly know the time and toll it takes to maintain a podcast, and we've literally seen sites come and go throughout 6 years. We are the longest standing now Supercoach podcast by a long time, because it certainly does take a lot of time and effort and even money. But in the meantime, a massive shout out to Jock. Let me put an accent on for Jock. What's the Jock accent?
You could just do the Crouching Tiger one.
Yeah, the Asian accent probably suit better. Oh, I can't even do it. Jock. We will miss you so much.
You do a terrible Asian accent, mate. big props to you as well, Marcus, because I hope everyone appreciates all the work that you do put in behind the scenes to keep this thing going and make sure that I turn up every week. And big thanks to our special guests like Faz and Danny, who should be on the show next week because they make it a lot easier for us as well.
One of the big commitments that Jock has is having to balance his family time. And we know you've had a couple of births in the last few years, so definitely appreciate you still hanging on. I will be so glad if we hit our 10-year mark, which is only 3 seasons time. But
only 3 years.
That'd be absolutely amazing. And I think we're fairly resilient. We've been around for a while, Mark. So big pat on the back to the both of us.
And good job to Jock and the community.
And with that, we'll catch you guys again next week. See ya.
So, yeah.
Bye.